Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the May 2024 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Moralia. Well, the label Two-Spirit is a newer term from the 1990s that describes a concept in many Native American cultures that's centuries old. The Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirits organization exists to restore and recover the role of Two-Spirit people within the American Indian First Nations community by creating a forum for the spiritual, cultural, and artistic expression of Two-Spirit people. My guest tonight is Angel Fabian, who is the executive director of the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirits. He'll talk more about this organization and about the recent gathering of Two-Spirit people. So stay with us. It's all coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, May 26th, 2024. I'd love to change the world. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of May 26th, 2024. In Argentina, 10 police officers have been arrested and charged with the murder of a transgender woman who was found strangled to death in a jail cell. The police officers were arrested on May 1st and were charged in a hate crime in connection with her death last year. This was part of an ongoing investigation and legal battle that's been happening since last September. The woman, Sofia Fernandez, was a 39-year-old former language professor in Buenos Aires who was just about to enter the field of nursing, something her family said she was very excited about. She had previously faced discrimination in academia, which led her to pursue a new career. She was just starting the process of getting her gender legally recognized at the time she was murdered. On April 10th of 2023, Fernandez was found dead in a jail cell after suffering beatings and physical torture before being asphyxiated by a piece of a mattress and her undergarments. Details about the case have been rolling out over the course of months, with her family finally having enough material to formally charge the police officers in late 2023. The family lawyer told the Washington Blade, quote, "The application of gender perspective in the judicial process has been crucial, underlying the importance of recognizing and addressing violence directed towards transgender people." The officers involved have been suspected of the murder since shortly after her death, but they initially tried to frame it as a suicide. They tried to justify her arrest and holding her by claiming she was involved in a robbery. However, there was no evidence that she was being lawfully held. And here in the U.S., the state legislature in New Hampshire passed three different bills this last week attacking transgender equality. The bills will now head to the desk of Republican Governor Chris Sununu. These bills include House Bill 1205, which bans girls from participating on school sports teams matching their gender, starting in fifth grade. In other words, all girls will be required to submit a birth certificate or other evidence of their sex assigned at birth. The bill also allows parents to sue their schools, the opposing school, the state school board that governs school sports, and the state if they believe that a transgender student was allowed to play. And then there's House Bill 1312, which requires schools to provide 2 weeks' notice to parents before discussing sexual orientation and gender identity, labeling such discussions as, quote, objectionable material, end quote. Democrats said the bill is so broad that it could even ban books depicting heterosexual couples. Republican State Senator Tim Lang said, quote, "If schools are going to teach these sensitive subjects, parents ought to have the ability to review the material and make informed decisions about their child's education," end quote. And then there's House Bill 619, which also passed. It bans bottom surgery for transgender youth, even though minors don't get gender-affirming genital surgery. There's no evidence that any minor in the state of New Hampshire has ever undergone sex reassignment surgery. And here in the Bay Area, City College of San Francisco may get its first gay chancellor. The College Board of Trustees is currently negotiating with Mitchell Bailey, who is a former official in San Mateo Community College's system, to serve as the interim leader of City College of San Francisco. The board is expected to approve Mitchell's new contract on May 30th. Bailey, who's 44 years old, told the Bay Area Reporter that he doesn't intend to apply for the permanent chancellor position, but he is excited to return to the world of community colleges. Until 2022, he had been vice chancellor and then chief of staff to the chancellor at San Mateo's Community College District. Bailey told the Bay Area Reporter that he's lived in San Francisco with his partner for 7.5 years. He's originally from eastern Kentucky and met his partner in Arizona. Before coming to the Golden State, Bailey was chief of staff and assistant to the president at Sinclair Community College in Dayton, Ohio. And don't forget, the 39th annual Sonoma County Pride Celebration is set for next weekend. Festivities begin on Friday, May 31st and run through Sunday, June 2nd. This year's parade and festival takes place downtown Santa Rosa on Saturday, June 1st at 11 a.m. A festival will follow at Courthouse Square. And then, of course, on Sunday, June 2nd, Wigs and Waffles, a brunch drag show, returns to the Graton Casino at 10 a.m. You can get all the details about all of the events happening here in Sonoma County at sonomacountypride.org. Be sure to stop by the KRCB booth at the festival. Outbeat Radio hosts will be on hand to say hi and wish you happy Pride. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
What is Two-Spirit? It's an umbrella term that bridges Indigenous and Western understandings of gender and sexuality. You may recognize it as the two that sometimes appears on the end of LGBTQ2. There are many definitions and understandings of Two-Spirit, and each is nation-specific. The term was intentionally introduced by Native people with the goal of finding common ground and helping educate about traditional teachings in a contemporary context. Two-Spirit Society of Denver offers the following definition. Two-Spirit refers to another gender role believed to be common among most, if not all, First Peoples of Turtle Island, North America, one that had a proper and accepted place within Native societies. This acceptance was rooted in the spiritual teachings that say all life is sacred. So how did the term Two-Spirit first come about? In 1990, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, at the third annual Native American Gay and Lesbian Gathering, the term Two-Spirit was proposed and affirmed by consensus. The word was a potential solution to what Native scholars and activists called the problem of naming, or making the many different sexual and gender identities that fall under the Two-Spirit umbrella legible across Native and non-Native cultures alike. For example, to illustrate the diversity of meanings that Two-Spirit contains, consider the following. In Lakota, the word Winkne means to be as a woman and refers to two-souled Lakota people who transgress boundaries of gender from what may be considered male to female. In Diné, Nadlehe means those who transform and refers to one of four separate genders, masculine-feminine, masculine-masculine, feminine-masculine, and feminine-feminine. Each gender has its own word in the Diné language. And those are just two nation-specific examples. There are so many more. Each nation's understanding of gender and sexual diversity is different and grounded in specific spiritual beliefs.
And here to tell us more about the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirits Organization is the Executive Director, Angel Fabian. Angel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good to be on the radio.
Well, it's wonderful to share your story about you, as well as the organization that you're working with and some of the great events that you have done. But before we get to all of that, our listeners always like to know where our guests come from, you know, what their experience was growing up and their connection to the LGBT community. So tell us about you.
Well, my name is Angel Angel or Flawis. In ceremonial spaces, I use Flawis Papalot, which is translates into butterfly of light. And I use he, she, they pronoun. My people are Benza, which are translates in our language into people of the clouds. The Mexica, so the Aztecs, called the Zapotec, and that's how we are known now. And I am an immigrant. I self-identify as Two-Spirit, as a healer, curandex, an organizer, an activist, socialist, and nonprofit slash healthcare professional. I have been doing work in communities of color, predominantly by POC communities, for over 30 years, and started very early doing organizing and activist work in high school, actually. I grew up in the migrant labor camps of the Central Valley of California, very blatant racist environment, You were either a landowner and white, or you were not. And very conservative Christian environment. I think what allowed me to survive that environment was a deep sense of identity through our migrant education counselors that we had access to. And they instilled this sense of pride in our indigeneity and in the great people that we came from. I'm a nerd by nature, and books saved my life as well. Mm. And so I did rather well. I graduated valedictorian from my high school and was accepted to 7 different universities, including Harvard and Stanford. And so I ended up attending Stanford as an undergrad. I've done a lot of HIV work. In the early 90s, I was doing work with or addressing the second wave of HIV and AIDS that impacted and overly impacted communities of color, specifically young, queer, gay, bi, trans, men of color. Here in the Bay Area, I was doing a lot of education and prevention work. And by default, because we had to do it all. You know, we were doing case management, we were doing housing, we were doing funeral arrangements, we were doing everything at that point because there were just so very few of us who had the cultural competence to be able to, and the language capacity to be able to provide those services to community. I gave a lot of my friends their positive HIV results, and I buried a good number of them as well. In terms of doing the work that I currently do and how I came to doing the work, it solidified with my own journey in recovery. I have been sober for 19 years in one program and 16 years in another. And those programs allowed me to connect to my spirituality. Mm-hmm. And my spiritual, I had, you know, when I came out at 19, I had, you know, walked away from Catholicism, from the Catholicism that was imposed onto many indigenous communities, and was in search of my indigenous spiritual connections. And they were always there. I just had to tap into them. Sobriety allowed me to begin in that journey. My coming into a two-spirit identity began with my sobriety, because that's where I was able to connect deeply with my spirituality, which I have deepened, and now I'm very involved. Not only as in the healing aspect, but also in the ceremonial aspect. That's the only reason that, you know, that I carry an indigenous name now, because I had the ceremony to be able to carry that name. And that name comes with responsibility, very similar to a two-spirit identity. You know, a butterfly of light means that you're accountable to a lot of folks. And have a lot of responsibilities set upon me. So accepting this position as executive director of the Bay Area American Indian Two Spirits, kind of the next logical thing to do, the next best thing. There was a lot of prayer involved before accepting this position. I have been courted by other larger organizations to lead them as executive director. But this one just felt right. It tied all my identities together. And you know, I held out from applying to this position for almost 3 months. Once I did, then it came easy. And we have been able to continue doing some really amazing things with the work. And the foundation that two-spirit community members here in the Bay Area laid the foundation. And so we are just expanding what is already there. But I'll stop there because I know there's other questions and I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's fascinating to me. I think one of the things that we have to remember is that long before sort of our current day attitudes in our society about LGBT folks, the ideas around queer people were very, very different. But the term Two-Spirit is relatively new. Tell us a little bit about the history.
So think about the term Two-Spirit as an umbrella term that was adopted. And it was adopted at a gathering, actually. And that particular gathering was, looking at some of my notes, but the Two-Spirit term was coined in 1990. And it was formalized and adopted by consensus at the International Gay and Lesbian Gathering in 1990 in Canada. And so the term itself, it refers to, it's a contemporary term that Native people with both feminine and masculine spiritual energies that possess both masculine and feminine spiritual energies, and it's rooted in an Anishinaabe term that means, that translates into Two-Spirit. And it was proposed in a dream, how usually things are happen, by Myra Laramie, who is Cree, at that particular international gathering.
Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the different roles that a Two-Spirit person has.
Some of them may be spiritual, some might be more physical, some maybe much more caretakers. But we have always existed before colonization.
Right.
You know, we always reference that LGBT people existed in Greece. They did not only exist in Greece and in the Roman Empire. They existed in the nation sphere.
Of course.
They've always existed in the nation sphere. And we always had a role in our society's sphere. And, you know, I'll reference, because I can't reference all the different nations, because there's 400, 500 different nations across the Americas and more, just by languages alone. But in my particular language, in my particular nation, the Zapotec, or Menza. There is a contemporary word that has been adopted, you know, it's Musha. And the Musha started, the term was very similar to the word queer. It was embraced because it used to be a derogatory word. To call someone a Musha was, you know, to be, you know, you were not a man, you were a wannabe woman. But in the 70s and then in the 80s, the Mushas took this word and transformed it. In a particular town in Oaxaca, Juchitán. Now in Juchitán, the Mushas of Juchitán, they have their own celebration. They have their own mass, followed by a pageant, followed by a huge celebration. And it's a weekend-long event. And people from throughout the world come to witness that celebration of indigenous identity. Before that is that the word that used to describe us or was used for us would translate into useless, an useless person. And, you know, in my opinion, and I still have to do a lot more research on that particular word, but it's not surprising that that word was used to describe us, because the first text or the first written text in my language was the direct translation of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So it does not surprise me that the Catholic rigid binary roles and gender roles were superimposed to communities, and everything that did not fit those roles was either erased, killed, or forgotten.
Tragic for sure. And there is so much history and so much there to learn. But I want to shift gears a bit and talk about what's happening today and this organization that you lead. You took over as executive director, but how long has this organization existed? And talk about what it does.
Well, BAITS, or the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirit Organization, was founded as a result of a prayer by Two-Spirit organizers in the Bay Area who wanted to create a forum for Two-Spirit and, by default, Indigenous community members to come back into their practices, to reclaim their role in community, and do so by creating a forum for spiritual, cultural, and social gatherings for and by Two-Spirit community members, their families, and their friends. And this is the, I think, the important piece, and do it in a sober space, in an alcohol and drug-free space. Because, unfortunately, and you know our story, that our community centers have always been bars and clubs. And unfortunately, alcohol and drugs, like many communities of color, have had a really negative impact in our communities. And so we, the organizers at that time, were very intentional about creating this organization and spaces that honored sobriety and that promoted sobriety. And they have done so ever since 1999. They have done gatherings, they have created different workshops. One of the pieces that was very important, you know, and there was a need, you know, there's always been a need. There was a need for community members who wanted to learn our songs and not be shunned or not allowed to participate because of their gender. And so the Bates Drum came to be in make sure that I get the right. So the first Bates Drum was gifted in the year 2000. So in 1999, Bates was established. In 2000, the Bates Drum appeared and was gifted as the first medicine drum. And it was, it did not matter your gender. As a matter of fact, feminine presenting community members were the majority of that drum and still hold that. You know, in this last powwow, they were the biggest drum circle in our arena. There were maybe 30 singers, you know, around the bass drum, which was beautiful. Because in traditional drums, mostly men are allowed to participate. Mm-hmm. Only men, only cis, mostly hetero men are allowed to participate. So the Bates Drum was, you know, came about in the year 2000. As a result of a need, again, then the Bates Powwow came to be. We had heard from many community members that they were being turned away from mainstream, mostly straight, or all of them straight, powwows. And the powwow circuit, you know, was growing and has been growing since 1976, I believe. And they were being turned away because of they wanted to present themselves in their authentic selves. Mm-hmm. whether it was their masculine energy or their feminine energy, but not being allowed to. And so with consultation from elders, because we are, that's our way. You know, we ask if we don't know, and we ask guidance, especially because we also have two-spirit elders. The first powwow was conceived in 2012. And it was, they didn't know, the organizers at that point, whether it was going to be well-received, if anyone was going to show up. But it turned out to be semi-room only. It was held at the San Francisco LGBT Center in the Rainbow Room, and it overflowed. It overflowed into the hallways. It overflowed into the lobby. There was just such a need. And it was a beautiful celebration that has expanded to now, you know, on February 10th, we celebrated the 13th annual Bates Two-Spirit Powwow at Fort Mason Center. And we welcomed close to 5,000 of our closest relatives. We had 76 vendors, including 3 food vendors. We had close to 350 community members participate in grand entry. We had gore dancers. We had Mexica or Aztec dancers, all queer or queer friendly. We had a beautiful MC. We honored community members. L. Frank was honored for their contribution to the Bates Powwow and the Bates community. We honored, you know, GAI, which is the Gay American Indians, that was established in San Francisco as well. And one of their founding members is still around, and the organization is still active. They were established out of the AIM movement in 1974. Riley Burns, you know, is still here in the community. So it was just, it has just grown to be a beautiful celebration.
It sounds really, really amazing. Well, this is probably a great time for us to take a music break. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I don't need you anymore. that was Adam Lambert with his version of Cher's song, Believe. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia, and my guest tonight is Angel Fabian. He is the executive director of the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirits Organization. I'd love to go back to the joy of the powwow that you were talking about and ask you about, well, it sounds like everybody is welcome. This is a public event. Is that true?
That is true.
And I,
with a caveat. That is true. With a caveat is that if you have never been to a powwow, there is protocol that you need to adhere to. And we make it very accessible. It's not, you know, we put up posters everywhere in the at Fort Mason, where you can, you know, with a QR code, where you can go and learn what a powwow is, learn what is acceptable and not acceptable, learn how to ask for permission to take someone's picture, with, you know, in the proper way to do that. It's very important for our allies, and we're using another word that is a little bit more descriptive of what our relationship to our allies, we would want them to be. We want accomplices. You know, what we ask for our accomplices is to do the heavy work, to do the emotional labor that sometimes gets bestowed upon us as by POC to educate you.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to an educational session and we're well-resourced to be able to do that educational session, yes. But to do it just on the whim, you know, there's a very beautiful performance artist, Lotus Boy, and they have this beautiful performance piece called Google It. And they ask allies, Google it. If you want to know the history, Google it. It's accessible, it's at your disposal. I'll reference some of the questions for this particular interview, is that it would take a whole class, a whole semester class, just to unravel the story of Indigenous communities in the US, in Canada, in the Americas, and across the world. You know, and so it can't be done in one interview.
Well, of course.
It shouldn't be done in one interview. And I invite your audience to be not only an ally, but an accomplice.
Mm-hmm.
And to educate yourself around the issues that have impacted and continue to impact Indigenous communities. Because in my experience, and allies and accomplices who are doing the anti-racist work, who are doing the anti, or that are naming their privilege, they're doing the work. They're investing themselves enough to do the work, to be able to show up correctly, and to show up right. So yes, it's an open and public. And for some accomplices that are with us, and some of them are on our board, it has been a transformative experience for them as well.
The way you described it in terms of you know, vendors and performances and ceremony, you know, my only experience is going to a pride celebration, right? It sounds very different from that in some ways and very similar in others. Empowering is one of the common words I'm going to guess that I would get from going to a powwow. Connecting with people who are like me, who are different in a variety of other aspects, but we all kind of share that common experience being a queer person. Is that how you would describe it to someone who's never been to one, a member of our community who wants to go, who wants to make some connections?
What I would say to that is yes. And, you know, and the experience is going to be very different. You know, some of the things that are happening, you may not understand, and that's okay. Because some of the things that happen in white America, we don't understand. And that's okay. But I think if folks come with an open mind and an open heart, and are willing to ask when appropriate, to write things down if they don't, you know, for them to research or to find out much more on. It's a space, you know, predominantly for and by Two-Spirit community members. But, you know, something that strikes me as it's odd, you know, there was one point in my life where I was doing a lot of ceremonial work in Mexico, you know, and then and I was going to a lot of ceremonial events. And then, lo and behold, I came up back into the States and went to visit some friends in, I think, Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And they're still packed. And so they took me to an Easter Mass. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, it felt very familiar. You know, it felt very pagan. You know? So I would encourage white folks to look into their own stories, into their own pre-Catholic, pre-Christian, and you'll find that you also have some connection to nature, that your peoples also honored and value nature the way that we do, and have very, very similar roles to what we have. And that has been forgotten. Is that something that may be awakened at a powwow? Maybe, maybe not. But definitely, I think the more that I grown as a person, and the more that I feel as a person, is we're much more the same than different in our emotions, in our needs, in our desires. And sometimes we just need to give each other the opportunity to learn from one another. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage folks to come into those spaces, to come with an open heart and open mind, to learn, you know, and it may not be your way, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Mm-hmm. There's room enough for that. And it may challenge you in ways that you may not have imagined. It may challenge your notions. It may challenge, you know, some internalized homophobia. It may challenge some internalized transphobia. It may challenge some internalized ageism. You know, and so it, because we honor our elders, you know, unlike, you know, our society, they kind of, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. Type of, you know, situation, you know. So there's a lot of differences.
Wonderful. Well, I was looking at the website for the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirits. You have stuff going on all the time. We're not just talking about a major gathering once in a while. There are sometimes multiple events going on every week. Can you talk a little bit about some of those events and what you're doing with them?
So yes, we have, we've been fortunate that our previous interim executive director, along with the board, did some really amazing fundraising. And mind you, to fundraise for this organization that is already doing amazing work. You know, just the numbers alone. Just the, you know, last year we had 4,000 people. This year we reached 5,000.
Wow.
Very well-funded organizations in the multi-million dollar budgets don't have these types of numbers. You know, and, you know, one board member was keen to reflect at one of our meetings is that, you know, there were points where we had $7 in our budget, you know, and now we have a comfortable and still growing, fortunately, budget that allows us to do year-round programming. And so what we started doing this past year was to kind of respond to the need of community. There was a need for community artists and cultural bearers to have the resources to be able to create their art that focused on a two-spirit identity or an indigenous queer identity. And so we were able to award, I believe there were up to 10 community artists and cultural bearers that got a $5,000 grant each to produce art. They just had to let us know what they were going to use it for. And, you know, we made the resources available to them. We were able to, as a result, again, of a need, last year, we have a week of events prior to the powwow. And in the week of events, we usually have a talking circle. And that particular talking circle, we had 65 folks on a Zoom talking circle. And just the need and the stories that were shared, and the stories of isolation, and the stories of, you know, really tough situations that community members are going through. What was requested by attendants were to have these on a more frequent basis, because the need was there. And so we were able to do talking circles on a monthly basis. We were also able to invite community artists and cultural bearers to share their gift, to share their gift of art. And so we had monthly workshops. We had workshops on shirt making, river shirt making. We had two beading workshops. We had, you know, the different traditions, reading calendars. We had printmaking workshops. We had hide tanning and regalia making workshops. There's just so much talent in community. And so we were able to bring artists and poster bearers in to have pretty intensive workshops. There were 6-hour workshops to share their gift with community. And then we've been able to support a lot of Two-Spirit and Indigenous Queer visual artists in their exhibitions and in their events. So we partnered with Queer Soma Arts in their Queer Arts Festival and supported that. We supported a digital artist that involved four other Two-Spirit artists, created this amazing digital platform, arts platform. And then we were able to support this up-and-coming Andean queer community in one of their events in Oakland. And so we've been busy.
There's no doubt about that. You can tell.
We've been busy, but again, we're just trying to meet the need. Right now, and I'll mention this last initiative that we were being funded by the San Francisco Human Rights Commission. We're starting a more formal assessment, community needs and assets assessment. It's called the Living in Abundance Initiative. And through it, we're hoping to have talking circles. We're hoping to have one-on-one conversations. We're hoping to do survey the community on what's really going on. We know because, you know, we work with community on a daily basis, but we want to put it, you know, put it on paper and, you know, and share it with different departments. Because unfortunately, still today, the community or Indigenous or Native American Indian community members are often erased.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot longer happen, or that cannot continue to happen. We have been here since time immemorial. And those of us who have survived, you know, are doing some pretty amazing work out in community.
Well, and the Bay Area group that you run on the website has a long list of groups very similar all over the country. And you refer to them as societies. But talk about this network, and are you connected?
We are super connected because, you know, once the term was coined at the international gathering, then everyone went back home, you know, and said, well, what is happening in the community? You know, we have predecessors. GAI has been doing this work since 1974. Mm-hmm. But this Q-Spirit resurgence has been amazing to see over time. So yes, we are connected. We strengthen our relationships at the international gatherings. There's one happening this year in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They alternate between Canada and the U.S. Societies hosting it. And they're an opportunity to continue learning from one another, to continue building alliance, to network, to collaborate in different projects, in different, there's still a lot of need, you know, in community and a lot of assets. And so we take those gatherings and we take those opportunities to continue building those relationships that are extremely important. I was able to put together this past powwow panel on the Q-Spirit movement, the state of the Q-Spirit movement. And because this year was also a traveling year for me, because, you know, when I first started this position, I went right into the powwow, and it's a massive event to organize. And so I really did not have time to connect with folks because I was just busy running around. But I knew that there were folks from throughout Canada and throughout the U.S. present. So because they supported the powwow, I took it upon myself, and it was part of, you know, fortunately it was written into my job description, that I would take it upon myself to go visit, to go to the international gathering. In it happened in Nova Scotia by the Wabanaki Two-Spirits Alliance, and met, you know, amazing Canadian organizers. I went to the Montana Two-Spirit gathering and met amazing, you know, U.S.-based organizers. I went to Vancouver to a research conference with a Two-Spirit Indigenous focus. I just came back from Phoenix and attended their Two-Spirit powwow, the Arizona Two-Spirit powwow. It's in its fourth year.
Mm.
And so we get to show up for each other. We have to. There is no, it's our way. It's just, you know, it's just, and we're received by family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's just, you know, that's just the Indigenous way. You know, you open up your home to folks with good intentions, and you welcome them to your territories. And so we got to welcome Everyone was in town, fortunately, for the two-spirit, the Bates two-spirit powwow, and we honored them. In that panel, we had executive directors or leaders from the Southwest Two-Spirit Society. We had folks from TSIMS, which is the Two Spirits in Motions in Canada, the Wabanaki Two-Spirit Alliance is there, and Uniting Resilience that is doing some amazing work South Dakota. So this is a movement. This is part of the indigenous resurgence that's happening, and we're right in the middle of it.
Love it. Where can people go to learn more about the Bay Area Indian Two Spirits?
So the Bates, please follow us on Instagram at Bates _SF, or on Facebook, we're under Bates. Or you can visit our website, www.baaits.org, and look under all the different tabs. You know, we have been busy this year as well to make sure that our website is up to date with all sorts of resources. We had a summer intern that gathered some really amazing resources across, internationally. So we are really happy. And I would not be doing my job if I didn't let folks know that, you know, this type of work and this type of programming takes support. And so if any of your audiences are in a position to contribute as a volunteer or as a donor, we welcome donations. Because again, very similar to a lot of indigenous organizations and very similar to a lot of queer indigenous organizations, we get very little funding in comparison to other mainstream organizations or other ethnic organizations. So we need the support because the work is being done.
Great. Well, if you missed any of those websites, we'll have them on our own website at outbeatnews.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page, and you can go and learn more about the Bay Area American Indian Two Spirits, the wonderful events, and make connections all across the country for sure. We've been talking with the executive director of the Bay Area American Indian Two Spirits, Angel Fabian. Angel, thank you so much for spending your time with us, and I just feel great about hearing all of this and all of the opportunities there are to learn.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to share our story. This is our 25th year anniversary this year. I tell folks that sometimes it feels like we're the best kept secret. Definitely in San Francisco, and definitely nationally. So, please join us, in some of our events. Please support the work. It's important whether you support your local organizations or you want to support us, but please support. And thank you. Thank you for, allowing me to do some gentle pushback in terms of the need for accomplices, much more than allies, and the work that needs to happen for good allyship.
And again, if you'd like to learn more about the Bay Area American Indian Two Spirits Organization, you can go to our website at outbeatnews.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page, and you'll find links. Hey, before we go tonight, I want to invite you all to join us this coming weekend for the 39th annual Sonoma County Pride Celebration. Your Outbeat Radio team will be at the KRCB booth located in the festival area. That's all happening on Saturday, June 1st in Courthouse Square in downtown Santa Rosa. The parade starts down 4th Street at 11 a.m. You can learn more at sonomacountypride.org. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Radio's Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. As always, that's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com.
I love to change the world, but I don't know what to do. So I give it up to you.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains, we gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise like the day. I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I do it a thousand times again. And I'll rise up, I like the waves. I'll rise up in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I do it a thousand times again. You. The silence is in.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.